The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey everybody, this is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Jason Goff and I am joined by none other than Rob Schaefer and of course our guy Casey Johnson, both from NBCSportsChicago.com, and our guy Tony Gill, our digital content producer here at NBC Sports. Coming up on the show, we'll discuss the 1988 Slam Dunk Contest, the last time the All-Star Game was here in Chicago. Looking forward to all the dissenting opinions and views, and looking forward to everyone being wrong after you listen to this podcast as well.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
So, fellas, the dunk contest is back here in the city of Chicago, as well as all the All-Star shenanigans. As a kid growing up, I could not wait for it. It was the greatest weekend in the world for me because you had everybody in one place. We talked about this on the last podcast, but that dunk contest in particular, 1988, Dominique Wilkins, and of course, Michael Jordan is what we remember. But Casey, as we were just talking about before we started recording, some of the other names in that dunk contest who kind of fell by the wayside, because KC, guys, if you don't know, KC Johnson has interviewed anybody and everyone who was in that stadium around that event. KC went back and talked to grade school teachers. He talked to counselors. He talked to police officers. He talked to people who own mom and pop record stores. He captured the 1988 Slam Dunk Contest like nobody ever will ever again. So this is why you need to go back and check out all of his pieces on NBCSportsChicago.com. But, KC, who else was involved in that 88 dunk contest that we really stopped caring about after Michael and Dominique captivated us?
And whose winner you will influence by the end of this podcast?
Oh, without question. Without question. We are going back. You know, I've gone back and kicked people out of the Hall of Fame. We are going back and changing what happened that night in Chicago, because home cooking was definitely on the menu.
Your other entrants were Clyde Drexler, very good dunker. Yeah. Otis Smith, also a very underrated dunker, yeah. Sneaky good. Jerome Kersey. Greg Cadillac Anderson.
That's the awesome one.
That's the good one. That's the outlier.
Because if you're my age, you remember Cadillac Anderson at the end of his, there's a spur at the end of his career there. And you're like, Greg Cadillac Anderson has never dunked a ball in his life. But you go back to 88 and you can see the footage, and Cadillac was a part of the festivities.
And last but not least, Spud Webb, who I did talk to. The only other entrant besides Dominique that I talked to for this oral history that we posted at NBCSportsChicago.com. And Spud was pretty great, because he was saying, you know, this is a former champion himself.
Yeah, he won 87, right, in Dallas?
86.
86?
Yeah, 87 okay, was Mike. 86 was Spud. And Spud was like, you know, I'm a competitor. You never think you're going to go into an event thinking you might lose, but I kind of thought I was going to lose. I mean, everybody kind of knew it was going to be Dominique versus Michael. And that's why with the All-Star game coming here, I kind of wanted to do something special. And like you, this was a pretty memorable moment for me watching this dunk contest. And I thought it'd be kind of neat to just kind of go back in time and talk to many of the principals involved, and it was a lot of fun to do.
So I love it when Rob is with us, because Rob is kind of like...
He wasn't born yet.
Yeah, exactly. Rob is kind of like...
He's a decade away from being born.
Yeah, hey, now. Actually... Come on now, Rob. You didn't have to do that. We all know we're the old people in the room.
I actually just watched this dunk contest from start to finish for the first time.
I'm glad you did.
So start... I'd seen all the highlights, obviously, but you'd watch the whole thing unfold.
You watched the grainy footage.
The hill that... Jason is going to climb by the end of this. Oh, yeah. I am there with you. I'm already up there. I'm waiting for you.
People know how I feel. We'll get to it. But Rob is kind of like Rob keeps us young, as well as Tony Gill here. He keeps us young in terms of these conversations. So I'm glad that you consume that today. Back then, I was 8 years old. But at that time, I was starting to figure out how much I enjoyed basketball and how it made me feel. And my father's friends were all Lakers or Celtics fans. Like, you had to be one of the two, you know what I'm saying? And we chided the ones that were Celtics fans because you were on the wrong side of, you know, the community back then. Exactly. Let's be real. Right. Cornbread Maxwell was the only person that you should root for on that team back then. And Robert Parrish, maybe. You know, he didn't talk enough for you to be fully invested. But, no, so everybody was either a Lakers fan or a Celtics fan when I was coming up. And then you see Michael Jordan come of age, and you see the dunk contest that he won before the year before that. And you remember the year that he wasn't able to participate with the broken foot. So the Spud Webb dunk contest. So all those things leading up to it, I'm a kid. I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be another great All-Star weekend. And then you get to see it happen. And on top of it, if I'm not mistaken, Rick Barry was the commentator for 87.
He was one of them. Steve Snapper Jones was another one.
Yeah,
A local guy was the play-by-play guy, Bob Neal, went to Marshall High School and then moved on to Atlanta, worked for TNT for many years.
Yeah, I remember Bob Neal. Yeah, yeah.
Talked to him on the phone, set up an interview with him, and then he ghosted me. So he's one of the few voices I was not able to get.
Bob, we're going to find you.
I told him we were going to talk Patrick Beverly, you know, Marshall High School, man. But, you know, maybe that scared him away.
Yeah. Bob was like, KC's got enough info. He doesn't need mine. But that, and if you go back and watch it the way Rob did, there's, it was the TV copy, right?
Yeah.
There are some things said at this dunk contest, there's some characterizations that probably wouldn't fly these days in terms of Rick Barry's commentary. Oh, yeah. Go back and check it out after this podcast if you got a little time at work, wherever
it's
you're
on
at.
YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah. No, yeah, yes. And none of it is edited. So what did you find in your extensive interviewing KC and all the people that you talked to, you know, to the participants, to the judges? What was most fascinating to you in your findings of that dunk contest in 88?
I mean, it's a wide-ranging answer. I go a lot of different ways. The biggest thing to me is Dominique told me that he and Michael have never spoken once about it since the event. And there's a kind of an unspoken bond between them that they just kind of both thought that they won. And they both know what they did. And they didn't need to talk about it because they know what they did. And the other big takeaway I had about it, and we've been dancing around it, I'm just going to come right out and say it. If you guys haven't figured out already, that Jason may think that the outcome is a
Dominique
little tainted.
Wilkins won the damn Dominique, dunk contest.
Well, it's funny because my first question to Dominique.
He won the dunk contest.
When I sat
guys.
Down with Dominique, my first question to him was, so Dominique, who won? And my last question to Dominique was, so Dominique, who won?
And Dominique's never been shy about talking about
Correct.
Dominique, by the way.
But what I will say that a big takeaway that I hope comes across, it may not come across as well in the written piece, which is why I'm going to say it here on the pod.
Mm-hmm.
Dominique is not bitter about it at all. He's not. Because for three reasons. He knows how amazing of a show he and Michael put on.
Yes.
He knows the respect that flowed between him and Michael about the event. And last but not least, and he has really good perspective on this, he said, we entertained for the crowd. And that's what we were there for. We entertained for the crowd.
Looking back at it, Rob, and consuming it the way you did, after the fact, there's a lot of things that you've seen as an NBA observer and in your time and watching the league. At the time, a lot of those things were very new. You know, Dominique doing a lot of stuff that he did, so the two-hand windmills and the power and grace with which he was flying through the air in that dunk contest. But having seen all the dunks that you've seen, for instance, you know, the Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon dunk
Sure.
contest in 2016, I mean, when you went back to it, were you like, oh, what's the fuss here? Or like, how did you, what lens did you have to put on?
You do as a young person have to fight that off when you're watching these dunks that are getting rated as high 40s and 50s of like, well, I've seen things that are crazier than that, right? But you have to put yourself in the perspective of this is the first time that a lot of these things are being done. And the spontaneity of everything, the lack of props, I mean, really, I don't think one way is necessarily better than the other. I think the dunk contest remains incredibly
it was still
entertaining.
When it was fresh.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, yeah.
But it's become almost like whimsical now, to an extent. But you just saw the two of them. It really was a pure competition. There was intensity. The television broadcast kept cutting over to Dominique, and I think it was Bob Neal was on the call on the one that I was watching.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, all right, and then now we'll go to Dominique's reaction after Michael would dunk. And there was no, you know,
TV show.
Yeah, there was no like raucous ovation or celebration or anything. It was just focus. It was, all right, give me the ball. Like that, I know what I have to do next now. And yeah, those dunks just kind of seem to come out of them in a very imaginative, spontaneous way that doesn't seem to exist now. And again, no way's better than the other.
No.
But those are the things that stuck out to me. And I'd be curious to hear your guys' thoughts on how you think it's evolved
time. The fact that we have to have a dunk contest, bring the dunk contest back, I think speaks to what has become. And before we get into that, though, let's actually hear from the guy who I think won the dunk contest, Dominique Wilkins. He sat down with our Casey Johnson of NBCSportsChicago.com.
Dominique, the All-Star Game is back in Chicago for the first time since 1988. You were there.
I was there.
You were involved in a little thing called a dunk contest.
I remember it for almost 30 years now.
Yeah. We're going to start with the easy question. Who won?
Well, I'll put it like this here. it could have went either way. With a slight advantage here, being in Chicago, you know, they swing votes here, you know how it go. But no, but, you know, of course, we both thought we won. But no matter who won, the fans got their money's worth. And that's what I tell people. Yeah, do I think I won? Yeah. But it didn't matter at that point because we entertained for the fans. That's what we did it for. And he would tell you the same thing.
Let's get a little bit into the build-up to that. I mean, obviously, you were injured in 87. He was injured in 86. There had been a lot of talk that this was kind of a foregone conclusion that you two guys would be in the finals. Do you remember the build-up and the anticipation leading up to the event? How much were you looking forward to going up?
Yeah, you know, we both missed it, you know, a year apart. And in Chicago, we both made the All-Star team. We knew we were going to face each other in the dunk contest. We knew it. We knew it. And we knew we was going to face each other in the finals. No matter who was in that dunk contest, we just knew that we were going to end up going head-to-head. It was like it was ordained or something. You know, we just knew it and that we're going to be facing one another.
What about the atmosphere? The Chicago Stadium is obviously known for incredible acoustics, loud building. Do you remember the electricity?
Man, the electricity, the mystique, everything about the Chicago Stadium back then, man. It was a perfect atmosphere for what we did.
How much practice or planning did you do? How did you put into your
How much practice or planning? Actually, none. I never practice it away from regular practice or going into a gym by myself and practice. Everything we did was spontaneous, and Michael was the same way. He never practiced those things. It was things we was doing in games. So we never really had to go in the gym and practice those things.
One thing that really jumps out to me about your style in those contests was how quickly, I mean, you didn't mess around. You just got the ball and you just went and did your dunk. You didn't think about it much. You didn't.
No.
You just went out and
you
did
know,
it.
I thought about the dunks as the contest went on. I said, well, let me just try this. You know, I haven't tried this. Let me do this. Let me see if this works. But there was a lot of dunks, again, that I would do in practice or in games. So it wasn't nothing that I felt was super difficult, even though I put my own little twist to it in a dunk contest. And again, Michael did the same thing. I mean, it was nothing that we did out of the ordinary. It was things that we put in game time form. So it made it easier for us to compete in a dunk contest.
Michael, I'm sure you remember, Michael gets the 47 on the second dunk of the finals. What's your mindset at that time? You both get 50 on the first dunk. There's three dunks in the finals. Michael gets a 47 on that second dunk. What's your mindset at that time? Actually, you've gotten two 50s at this point. He gets a 47.
I thought, sure, I got it. You know, that's what I said. I got it. Because I thought my last dunk was my best dunk. And I got a 40, I think 47 or something like that. And
No.
It was a low. It's like 40. It might have been a 46, 45, something like that. And I looked at it. I was like, uh-oh. I'm like, uh-oh. I knew I was in trouble.
But let's rewind. Michael gets a 47 on the second dunk. You've got two 50s at that point. What's your mindset going into your third dunk?
Well, I knew my last dunk, I'm going to get a 50 because I saved my best for last. And I got a, like you said, a 45. And I'm like, uh-oh. Fix in? I would have been happy with a 47 or 48, but a 45, come on, man.
Describe that dunk for us. I mean, that's just
it was. That's a two-hand windmill, you know, off 2 feet, and so it ain't too many guys who can do that.
It's. I'm going to put the objective reporter hat aside for a second. That dunk is ridiculous. I mean, you drop it down, you double pump, and you do
and
a
I brought it from my knees.
And you do a two-handed windmill. Who does that? So now the judges come with a 45. What's your reaction in that?
Well, moment? I think you know we had quite a few judges from Chicago, so you know, so it's easy to swing votes when you got it like that. But you know, we laugh about it, we joke about it all the time. But you know, something that we've never done, Michael and I, we've never talked about it with one another. It's kind of an unspoken thing between us. So you know, because we knew what we brought to the table, we knew who won. You know, and of course, Mike would think he won. I thought I won, but it really set up for one, in my opinion, the greatest dunk contest ever. And to this day, no one did it the way we did it. We didn't use props. We didn't use any of that stuff. We just used a basketball and our sneakers and our imagination.
What do you think props does to a dunk contest?
Well, I think props takes the element of surprise away. We wanted the fans to be surprised everything we did. You know, they didn't know what was coming. And I think that's what props do. It takes that away.
Getting back to that 45 briefly, you probably know this guy because he's based in Atlanta now and has been for years. Bob Neal was actually on the call for whatever channel this is on. And mm-hmm. he said, can we call that a make good? I mean, even in the real time, the announcers were like realizing that you kind of might have got robbed on that 45.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not that it doesn't do anything for you now. But.
Yeah, nah, you know, but, you know, one thing I really respect about Mike, and I saw an interview recently, he said, you know, Neek was amazing. I tried to be as amazing. He said he was incredible. And if it was me, I probably would have given it to him. But he was in Chicago. It wasn't going to be. No, so he actually said that. And I was like, that's why I love you, Mike. You know, but for us, it really wasn't about really who won or lost. It was giving the fans about everything that they come to see at All-Star Weekend. And the fact that we're talking about it 30 years later lets you know how important that dunk contest was.
And along those lines, what really jumps out at me watching this, and I've watched it many times to prepare for this interview, is the respect you guys have for each other while it's going on. You're crouched down by the judge's table, and Mike does a dunk, and you kind of point at him, and vice versa. He's giving you the nod.
That was the respect we had for one another.
Yeah.
We wanted the other two, you know, put on their best show. Give it your best dunk. So it is something you can appreciate, so it helps you step your game up. So we had an ultimate respect for one another. To this day, we're like that. And it's funny because we rarely ever talk basketball. Rarely ever.
And you've never talked about this dunk contest?
We've never talked about a dunk contest.
That's amazing to me.
Because, again, to us, that's a kind of an unspoken thing with us. We know what we did, so we don't have to talk about it.
So the 45's in the books. Michael prepares for his last dunk. You're crouched down by the judges' scorer's table. Talk us through your memories of that moment and what he did for
his I knew when he went to the back, the other end of the court, I knew a dunk was coming. You know, he was going from the free throw line. And I knew when I got that 45, if he made this dunk for the free throw line, he pretty much was going to win it. And that's what happened.
All right, before the interview, you brought up the dunk contest has evolved or where we think it's at right now. And we'll react to what we heard from Dominique here. But I think it seems like a mass-produced, shiny version of what the essence was. I mean, I've seen dunk contests on the high school level, on the collegiate level, all those things. And in the end, you're hoping you see something that you've never seen before with a person and a ball. And then, you know, the cars come into play.
Drive a key out.
Yeah, exactly. And the second,
the magic mascot
the second hoop when Dwight brought the other hoop out and put it up to 11.5 or whatever the case may be. You know, like, people are running out of dunks. But the best part about all of this to me is there is still another level left to be explored. And that's with a lot of these kids who are doing the street dunking and a lot of these guys who aren't in the NBA who I think a lot of these NBA players are scared maybe to go up against because you got to figure out so what do you have to lose debate that a lot of these guys have with themselves. Like, for instance, I think it's a shame that LeBron James has never participated in this event. You know, all the greats have. And you, from LeBron's angle, you know, a lot of people around him have said, like, what does he have to win? You know, the only thing that can happen is him losing.
Right.
And as you mentioned, Casey, about the and Rob, about the competitive aspect of this, like, you seeing guys go out there as if they're playing a game, like, okay, I'm more imaginative and I'm as athletic as you, so I'm going to do something crazy here. And the fact that Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon have to bring it back, or, you know, there's a lot of guys who are like, okay, the dunk contest is back. I remember watching the dunk contest when I never felt like it was gone. So that's where I'm at with it now. Every year I watch it and I'm like, okay, that was fine, but I'm hoping for something that I haven't seen before, and I don't know if those things are out there. I don't know if those dunks are out there.
Right, and I think that to me is why this one, and partly is, I mean, you said you're 8, you said you weren't born. Okay, so I was a junior in college when this was going on.
Let's get it.
As I rock back and forth in my rocking chair right now.
But that's why this looks for our guy on the way out.
Yeah, thank you. That's why I think this one is so powerful to me for many reasons. First of all, it is pure competition. And also, you have to place this in the historical context. The All-Star Game had just – the dunk contest had just come back to the All-Star Game in 1985. It was a relatively new event. All-Star Saturday was a relatively new development in the NBA. Dominique had won one to this point. Michael had won one at this point. They had each missed each other 1 year because of injury. So the buildup to this is over a multi-year period. Then it's a pure competition in this way. These are two Hall of Fame players that are going head-to-head. And lastly, and the thing that to me is the most intriguing aspect of it, you have incredibly contrasting styles. You've got the grace and the flair and the majesty and the athleticism of Michael Jordan against, like, power that we have not seen from Dominique. He is doing ridiculous dunks with power. It's a lethal combination, which is why Jason thought he won.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm biased, too, because Dominique was my favorite player growing up. So to watch him do what he did, I mean, I watched him do some of those things in games. Like, you know, those Celtics-Hawks series for me as a kid, like, I was a Bulls fan growing up, but, like, I always adopted another team outside of the team that I rooted for in the city. And for me, I was a Hawks guy and I was a Dominique Wilkins guy. So having them be on a stage, and it's also kind of like, you know, like your favorite band finally gets a deal or whatever, and they go big on you, and you're proud of them, and then you find a way to hate them afterwards because they're too commercial. Like, for me, that was the chance for a lot of people who I had been talking to about Dominique, like, who's my age, and kids who just love Jordan. I'm like, no, check this guy out. You're about to see it. So watching him do the two-hand dunks, and you know how we have the microphones near the rim now? The sounds that came from that dunk contest.
Violence. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing sounds. Like hearing a ball go through a net and someone's hands smashing against the rim, and that being your cue as a fan to involuntarily just emote. Like, that was the poetry in it for me. Like, everyone waiting for it to be completed so they can, like, release whatever energy they had. And that's why, you know, that's why to me, and Mike had done a couple of the dunks twice in the dunk contest. Like, we see the spliced highlights, right? We don't see, like, dunk to dunk to dunk. And when he pulled out the second free throw line dunk, I'm like, oh, this is in a bag for Dominique. Like, we saw this already. Like, we chided Nate Robinson for missing 15 dunks in a row or whatever. But if Nate Robinson would have pulled off two of the same dunk, they'd be like, oh, we saw that one already. But back then, it's still, you know, it's still nuance and it's still a new phenomenon in Michael Jordan. But yeah, I was kind of crushed. That was, like, one of my first real defeats as a fan, as a kid, was watching Dominique Wilkins lose that dunk contest to Michael Jordan because it was in Chicago and because Mike was getting ready to be the Mike that we know now today. But yeah, it was definitely two titans going at it.
I'm glad you mentioned that his dunks you saw him do in games, because Dominique, in my interview with him, said that I asked him how much he practiced or how much thought he put into preparation for dunk contest. He goes, none, because I did all these dunks in games.
Yes. See, that's amazing. That's amazing.
So he's like, I basically just went up there, took the ball, and did something I had done in a game before. And he said Mike was the same way, which is also pretty cool. Although I've never saw a foul line dunk in a game. So
that's. I mean,
Earl McGee tried one.
Yeah. And he brought his mom out there too, right?
Not JaVale did in the game.
No, I thought you meant the dunk contest. Yeah, and one of the more, concerning moments in dunk contest history when JaVale's mom comes out there and everyone's ogling her and Dr. J gets a kiss on the lips and we're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Like, what, is this the after party or the dunk contest? But yeah, back to the 1988 dunk contest though. Rob, your understanding of Michael Jordan's legacy and you know, iconic status when watching this, do you kind of get that understanding and that feel of, okay, this is why everyone adores this dude, not just the game stuff, not just the shoes and all the other things that go into it, you know, the cable TV boom that kind of, you know, merged with his career and let him get into every home in America. But the dunk contest was like, that's one of the pillars of his legacy.
Yeah. Well, you talk about the rare sounds coming from the net and the hand smashing in the rim. There were rare sounds coming out of the crowd too, yeah, especially for like what is allegedly a neutral site exhibition competition, like
Rob, it's all good. If you think Mike won, it's all good.
That's not what I'm trying to say.
Jump on that side, right?
But you just see the way that he commanded that entire room, that entire arena, anticipation of walking back to the back line for the run up to the free throw line, dunk that he eventually did. You know, all of those things kind of go into his legend. And then I think we should also talk about, KC spoke to Bill Smith, the Bulls photographer, who took the iconic picture that you've seen plastered on mm-hmm. Gatorade posters across the country and world. That's another one where he's truly levitating and floating in air in a way that is not, I don't think, captured on the television broadcast in as powerful a way. Because they take that, have you guys watched it recently? They take that top angle where you don't really see exactly where he took off from.
That's a great point.
Do you know what I mean? And then you go back and you look at that, you look at the Sports Illustrated photo too, and you get that majesty that you're talking about in a way that wasn't necessarily conveyed in live action.
Let's face it, the TV technology is obviously better now too. Yep. I mean, we wait now to see the replay so we can be in awe of a dunk. Like that, the Vince Carter dunk contest, I mean, you go back, nobody knew that he put his whole elbow in the rim until you saw him hanging there. You're like, wait a minute, I got to see that again. Or, you know, some of the other things that happened in that dunk contest. So we think about the TV aspect where these guys are seemingly dunking in a dimly lit gym. Like the lighting isn't any different than it was for regular Chicago Stadium events. There's flash bulbs going on. But now it's like a pressed and polished and manufactured TV show. This is like the raw, purest form of the art going on. And it happened to be with two of the greatest players of all time.
And that's what Adam Silver, I think, said this to you about. You just have to
look at all these names that Rob's out here dropping.
Well, I got my notebook. Well,
Adam Silver was in the crowd as a fan.
Really,
he was a University of Chicago law school student, and he bought a ticket to watch this as a fan. So I interviewed Adam about this, and you know he talks what the greatest line that he had in my interview with him. I mean, I was interviewing about other stuff, but I obviously talked to him about this. Mm-hmm. The greatest line he had about it was just how, you know, the great thing about that Bill Smith photo from the side is if you look at it, everybody in the stands is transfixed on the moment. Nobody's holding up a cell phone.
There's no smartphone.
Taking it in.
So that Silver said the amazing thing about it is now you see it live and you preserve it in your memory in a certain way. And now you watch it on TV, and sometimes it doesn't always square with how you remember it and envision it in the moment because it was so amazing and so heightened at that moment. In fact, his funny line was, to me, it felt like Michael took off from the half-court line.
Damn.
That's pretty cool to be talking to the commissioner of the NBA who's in the crowd as a fan while he's a University of Chicago law school student. That's about as real as it gets right there. And he thought, he had a funny line. I asked everybody the same question, who won?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, Michael's my boss, so Michael won.
Speaking of people who are closely affiliated with Michael, David Falk, you got a chance to talk to him as well. Before we throw it to that interview, what was that chat like for you?
We were talking to him about a couple different projects we're working on, but for this particular piece, he also kind of confirmed how Michael really didn't put much stock or practice into this. You know, he was chasing championships. He didn't want to be known as just a dunker. Mm-hmm. What intrigued him about this was the competition. going against Dominique and the build-up to that. As I mentioned, placed it in the context of history. Each had won one. Each had missed one to injury. So this was a big deal. So he was doing it more because of the showmanship angle of for the hometown crowd in Chicago, and then also because of the pure competition against Dominique. Winning dunk titles, David Falk emphasized, did not matter as much to him as just winning. He was chasing championships, not dunk titles.
All right, let's hear from David Falk, who sat down with our KC Johnson.
Let's start, David, by asking what you remember of the buildup. I mean, Michael was injured in 86 for the dunk contest, and Dominique was injured in 87, and here comes 88, the last time the All-Star game was in Chicago, and obviously everybody kind of figured it was a foregone conclusion that those two would be in the finals. But what do you remember of the buildup to the dunk contest, which was in its infancy back then?
Well, it was because we had recently signed Dominique as a client. He's a really, really nice person. And you think about the lay of the land in the NBA in 1988. Dominique was one of the great athletes, you know, human highlight film. But you have Michael Jordan, who's the greatest player. And so, like, it's like you're Pacino and you're in a movie with De Niro, and everyone says, wow, look how great of an actor is De Niro. And you're not getting your props. So, you know, Dominique's a competitive guy. And dunking, as great as a dunker as Michael was, no one said Michael's a dunker. They said he was the greatest player ever. Dunking was Dominique's, like, forte. So here he is having on Michael's home court. And, you know, the dunk contest in 88 was fairly recent. It had just been brought back, I think, in 84.
85, yeah.
In Denver. Yep. I believe in Denver, whatever.
Larry Nance won the first one.
I'm sorry?
Larry Nance won the first one.
Yeah. You know, that had been a mainstay in the old ABA. And they had some of the amazing dunk contests with David Thompson, A-Train from Chicago, you know, played for...
Dr. J,
Gervin, and Darnell Hillman. Those were the five guys. I see Darnell all the time at the Pacer games. And, you know, the old-time players, when I was just starting in the business, would tell stories that, like, you know, Gervin did where he, like, put it in his elbow and punched it through. I mean, Dr. J had double tap backwards on the backboard. And so you'd never seen those things because they weren't on TV. So they brought the dunk contest back. And right away, you could tell how subjective it was. Like, is Larry Nance a better dunker because he's 6'10 and could jump to the moon than Terrence Stansbury, who's 6'5? You know, and I always thought that the judges gave marks for some of these players. You give somebody a 10, you got to be Nadia Comaneci. I mean, that is... I don't want to quote our resident 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but it has to be perfect. And I always thought the judges were a little too lenient with the grades. And then you got to 88. And I think Dr. J was in the 88 contest, if I recall. No?
Sitting in the stands.
Okay. He was a judge. He might have been a judge.
Clyde Drexler was in the 88
okay.
contest.
Yep. Anyway, Doc had done the length of the court a year or two before. And obviously Michael did that in the ADA contest. And he actually, that gave way to the Nike commercial about flying, about with the professor who said he defied gravity. It was tremendous. And you know, if you're Michael Jordan, you ordinarily win those things. But I remember if you ask him, what was the one thing that he didn't win? It was in high school at the McDonald's Classic. My dear friend Morgan Wooten, who's the DeMatha coach, was one of the judges of the MVP. And Michael should have won the MVP. And Adrian Branch, who's a DeMatha player, who actually, I think, was drafted by the Bulls in 85, won the MVP. And that always rankled Michael because he knew it wasn't even close. And so here you have it where it really was close. I mean, you could have made a case, you know, for either player, but there's no way in history that in Chicago in 1988, Michael Jordan's not going to win the dunk contest. He was spectacular.
Where were you sitting?
I was sitting right at half court, maybe row six. I had great seats. And I mean, obviously, Michael's been a very special person in my life. You never root against Michael Jordan, ever. You know, but you have to think Dominique probably had a a reasonable gripe. He was pretty spectacular in the contest.
Before the foul line dunk, I don't know if you'll recall, there was a second dunk that Michael tried where he got a 47 out of 50. And on the broadcast, the announcer says the judges are going to need the National Guard to get out of here. Do you remember the reaction and the booing?
Well, I remember the one he did, the one he went underneath and almost hit his head on the rim. I mean, he was at the height of his, he was young. He just, he'd come back from the foot injury in 86. And he's at home. I mean, this is home in front of his own fans. And it was, in my opinion, the greatest dunk contest that I had ever seen before or since. I think it sort of run its course. All the guys jumping over props and Dwight with the Superman cape. I mean, it's just so hokey.
Well, that's actually a good point, because beyond the fact that you have two athletes in their prime, two athletic marvels in their prime, with this big build-up to it, there's no choreography involved. It's just two guys trading blows, going at it with these incredible dunks.
And the build-up, you were not disappointed by the result. I mean, oftentimes, you have to be a great fight or a great game, and the game just is boring. That was extremely exciting. I mean, a head-to-head. Either guy legitimately could have won the contest. Many people said if it weren't in Chicago, Dominique might have won. But hey, it was in Chicago.
Had he told you about the foul line dunk in advance?
No. The only time Michael ever asked me a question about the dunk contest was his rookie year in Indianapolis. I guess that was 85. And he asked me, what he should wear. And back then, unlike today, the NBA was much smaller. It was much looser. It wasn't as regulated. And there were no really rules of the dunk contest. So I told him, you should wear your Nike stuff, because it was his stuff. And many people think that by wearing his, he actually wore, black and red sort of warm-up suit. He wore some chains. And a lot of people felt that rankled some of the established players like Magic and Isaiah, that led to the freeze-out. I mean, it wasn't because of the publicity, it was because of what they perceived as his arrogance in wearing his own stuff in the dunk contest. Of course, if they had their own stuff, they could have worn it too, but that's a whole different question.
But that actually ties nicely into my last two questions. How much do you think that day, that dunk contest, that win, helped in his marketing? Because, I mean, it was already taking off, but that foul line dunk gave you opportunities. It was almost the prelude to Space Jam in some ways. I mean, do you look at it that way ever?
No, you have to understand Michael. He enjoyed the competition. He was young. But what he wanted the most was a ring. And so people saying he's the best dunker, he's the best one-on-one player in the league, like that meant nothing to him. It was almost a negative, because what he wanted was what Magic and Bird had. He wanted jewelry. He wanted rings. And so while he enjoyed the fun of the competition, I don't think it had the kind of psychic significance to him that it had to other people.
Hmm. Did that day at all help him signal his arrival to the level of Magic and Larry?
The only thing that signaled that was winning the first championship. I mean, that was the one thing that, as he won all the scoring titles, he won the MVPs, and people basically said he's the greatest one-on-one player. He was envious. He wasn't jealous. He was envious that his peers, Magic and Bird, Worthy, who he'd gone to school with, they all had rings. And that's the one thing that all the dunk contests and all the scoring titles, nothing substitute for saying you're the champion.
And lastly, who won, Dominique or Michael?
Michael.
All right, so the quote that stands out to you, KC, as we were talking about it.
David Falk talked about the Michael winning this and saying how it helped pave the way for the Nike commercial about flying.
That's a good lift.
Yeah. And this is agent talking here. It was tremendous.
Yeah, of course.
Of course it was.
So I asked him, man, how much did this help? And I mean, obviously, Michael was ascendant in a big way at this point already by 88. He's been in the league for a little bit. But this did kind of help start the marketing component. I mean, it wasn't the only reason, and he probably would have still got to where he got to, but this certainly was a nice little rocket ship fuel boost to that marketing angle of Michael Jordan.
I mean, we talk about the showcasing of Let's face it, his first All-Star game, and you know, where they talked about the shoes, and you know, the first game where he wore his ones, and they didn't comply with NBA rules, like the gold chains and being frozen out at the All-Star game. Like, all these things led to, because you know, the way Michael is placed now, he's placed as this all-time winner, greatest competitor of all time, you know, mega athlete champion. But in those days, Michael Jordan was seen as the disruptor. And a dude who was, you know, this was a league that wasn't built around wing players. I mean, every team had a big. And how, depending on how good your big was, that's how good your team was going to be. And then here comes this 6'6" dude who's flying through the air, who's taking 30 shots a game, really doesn't trust his teammates, put 63 on Boston in a loss, you know, is going crazy on the parquet. Like, all these things are happening. 87 happens, then 88 happens, and that slam dunk. And that was the last one that he participated in, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So, I mean, these are the things that lead to the wonderful chaos that is Michael Jordan's career that we celebrate to this day. I mean, in this dunk contest, too, I mean, shoes, and this is why, this is another reason why I love basketball, and we've talked about this, too. Like, there's nowhere where you could actually be more like the people who are on the field or on the playing surface than there is basketball. Like, we all wear basketball shorts, you know, whether we're lounging around or actually playing. The shoes are a part of the culture as far as, you know, what a guy is wearing or how successful or popular a guy is. Or if it's a player you don't like, first thing you do is you make fun of his shoes. You go at, like, Kawhi Leonard going to New Balance was like a big thing. So all these things are you know, thrown in the pot that is Michael Jordan. And that dunk contest and the iconic, you know, poses, photos, the slam dunk competition. I mean, he got a 50, is like, you know, that's like, we'll see you here tomorrow. Like, for me as a basketball fan, like, I hear he got a 50, or I hear somebody got a 50, I think back to that time where Michael got that 50 when it should have been a 48, 47. But, you know, these are the things we think about from 1988. So all these things helped propel Michael Jordan and also the Chicago Bulls into a world-class entity, not just in this city or in this country.
So he's obviously on this steady upward trend on the years building up to it, but would you say that this is one of the first steps from kind of perceived arrogant disruptor, right, to then immortal, where he doesn't lose, he's never lost? The things that I hear, the mystique that my generation hears about.
I still think it's the playoff performance stuff.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
As far as...
Because even after the dunk contest, sorry to interrupt,
he
still hits the brick wall of the Pistons, exactly, for a couple more years.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's why...
But it's interesting to look at as context in retrospect.
Yeah, the build-up.
Yeah,
the build-up. And that's why that dunk contest... You know, and I'm looking forward to this year's as well, even though the names might not, you know. That's the other thing, too. As you mentioned, Casey, and you can't stress it enough, having two Hall of Famers compete in the dunk contest.
In their prime.
While ascending, too. Like, these guys are just hitting that window of, okay, I'm here. I mean, Mike was in the league for 4 or 5 years at this point. You know, Dominique was in the league for 5 or 6 years at that point, because I believe he was the year before. He got drafted the year before. So these guys are hitting their prime, and they are taking the NBA by storm. They're doing it on the court, and then all of a sudden they get to showdown. They get to face off in a big city during the All-Star weekend. Like, can you imagine what this would be if – I don't know. I mean, and nowadays, the game has changed so much so that, like, the three-point shootout is as important as the dunk contest, because you got a bunch of kids who are running around wearing Under Armour who only know Steph.
That's another good point.
You know, so the fact that Steph has changed the game so much and Golden State Warriors have changed the game so much, people want to know if you can shoot. People want to see shooters. The dunk contest stuff, the greatest athletes in this game right now, how many of them, their greatest attribute is dunking? Like, think about it. Like, even Giannis. Giannis is a guy now who, I mean, Giannis finishes at the rim. Giannis isn't a dunk contest guy. Now, Giannis isn't a stylistic guy. Giannis is like Shaq at the small forward position, kind of, you know what I mean? So think about how the game has changed, where you had Clyde Drexler, Hall of Famer, Dominique Wilkins, Hall of Famer, Michael Jordan, Hall of Famer, wing position players who athletically were untouchable. Now, you give me the top 10 players in the league, how many guys are you going to say, no, that guy's a dunker. That guy's an artiste in the air.
The only one that jump comes to mind for me is, and he's not a top 10 player, is Zion.
Right.
He's played eight, nine, ten games. Other night, and he does a whole lot more than that.
Exactly. But I'm saying Zach, right?
Yeah, Zach. But he's
Zach, I know, not just a dunker, but like you don't throw out too many too many attributes or too many characteristics before you get to ridiculous, amazing dunker when you talk about Jordan and Dominique Wilkins, Vince Carter, like those kinds of guys. Like Vince Carter was that guy when he got into the dunk contest, but Vince Carter became a three-point shooter, you know, shortly after he left Toronto. Like those are the things where the game has changed so much so that the dunk contest is viewed in a different light than I ever thought it would be. Because now you're begging guys to come out and you're begging guys to do it, and guys don't want to do it. Guys understand the sponsor obligations. And like I mentioned with the LeBron thing, guys don't want to take losses for their sponsors.
Pride, yeah.
You don't, like, getting a big Nike deal or getting a big Adidas deal and then being the guy who lost the dunk contest in those shoes, like that, marketing-wise, I'm sure these guys are getting algorithms, they're getting numbers, they're getting, you know, data surveys and studies and, you know, test cases where they're like, okay, if we lose, what is this going to do to your shoe, or what is this going to do to this weekend where we've built it around you? So there's a lot of reasons why, like I said, this is the purest form of it in 1988, and you go back and watch it, everything seems raw, everything seems gritty, but it all seems real as well. Like even the imperfections of the broadcast, like you mentioned, where we're just getting crowd reaction, we're just getting, you know, the reaction of the participants. Now we're getting reactions of the guys who are sitting on the sideline like, yo, I can't believe that dunk just happened, and guys with their phones and camcorders out, more so than we're getting of the actual competitors.
Jason, you made a good point about
what's the
best players in the league now, their best attribute. At one point, dunking was like the number one thing back in the day, where if you couldn't dunk, really you weren't in the conversation to be one of the best players. But it seems like the NBA kind of did this to themselves by emphasizing more space in the three-point shot and de-emphasizing the payoff of the dunk.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, that's all you would see is now when you look at, all right, who's the best dunkers in the league? It might be Derek from Miami.
Derrick Jones Jr.
Derrick Jones. Yeah. He might be the best dunker in the NBA, and nobody cares.
A rotational dude.
Nobody cares.
I mean, look who won it last year. Hamidou Diallo. Like, right. What?
Yeah. No kids care about it.
Yeah.
Like,
I went rewatched that one,
forgot about that.
Yeah.
Don't do that again, Rob.
But the game, it has changed so much that the dunk doesn't excite anybody, and that's weird saying.
Well, the problem is the best dunks aren't happening in the NBA. Like, the best dunks are happening on your phone. You know, House of Hoops and, I mean, House of Highlights, I should say, and Overtime and all these kids. Like, there's a group of kids in some Utah school who I was watching the other day. All of them dunk ridiculously well. Like, all these kids are out there just running up and down, you know, just absolutely doing mind-blowing things. And they're in high school. So now is the gravity-defying stuff that we thought we'd only see in the league, we're seeing on our phones, we're seeing with YouTube. So we've kind of been desensitized to what a great dunk is. My buddy Clinton Yates, who's a huge baseball fan, he made this point at the beginning of last year, and I'll use it forever. He's like, baseball is still cool, but the special plays have become routine. Like, remember when you saw a double play back in the day, you're like, yo, that takes some finesse, some chemistry, some timing. Now, a double play is routine. Like, if you're not turning double plays, you're a bad infield. And now with the flair that people are doing it, that has become routine as well. I remember Ray Ordonez and guys like that, you know, back flipping the ball behind their back and all that. Now that's routine. So a lot of these dunks that we're seeing now, they're happening in our faces, on our phones. So by the time the dunk contest comes around, the special nature of the dunk, it's kind of taken away. And on top of it, there are a lot of people in those gyms, you know, throughout All-Star history, especially over the last 15, 20 years, who are no particular fan of anyone involved in the contest. They're just there. They're sponsors and sponsors' kids. It's kind of got like a Pro Bowl feel to it, where who are you rooting for? It doesn't matter. I'm just here for the dunk contest. I'm just here to be seen. Whereas back then, you had a lot of people. You can take a look at that 88 footage. There's a lot of Chicagoans in that footage. You know, you got a lot of push broom mustaches. You got a lot of dude, a lot of Streets and Sands dudes out there for some reason. Like you got actual people who seem like they were at this event. So the atmosphere, the desensitization of the dunk, all those things that have gone into it, I don't think we'll see things like we saw back then. And that's why when Zach and Aaron did what they did a few years back, we were like, oh, this is what it used to feel like. That felt like that every single year. I mean, I remember when Harold Miner won it. That was huge. Like, I remember Baby Jordan winning the dunk contest. I'm like, this is kind of cool. I know he wasn't going to, you know, be awesome, but this is kind of cool. I remember Isaiah Ryder doing it. And then the next year, Kobe Bryant doing it with the same East Bay Funk dunk. The same dunk. And he won it, and he won the contest the next year. Like, those things were cool because you saw the best players, you know, competing, one, and you thought you hadn't seen every dunk. Now, we feel like we've seen every dunk, and I feel like you can go back to these and some ABA dunk contests, and this is the genesis of it. This is where it all started. So hopefully this year's dunk contest can match what 88 was. I do not bet on it, though.
It's funny you bring up Dr. J, because not only did Michael, the day of the event, Dr. J was in the stands, and Michael was quoted a newspaper account at the time. I was not able to get Michael for the oral history.
Damn.
I tried.
I know you tried.
He said he looked up in the stands and saw Dr. J, and that's what gave him the motivation for the foul line. So there's a lineage here, because then for this piece, I also talked to Vince Carter and Zach LaVine about what this 88 dunk contest did to them. Vince Carter talked about going out as an 11-year-old and playing on his Fisher-Price hoop and trying some of the dunks, and then by 12 years old, he could do some of the dunks. Think about that.
It's a good year.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good year of growth.
It's just kind of this cool, the lineage of the history of the dunk contest, and to me, obviously, you point to certain touchstones ones, and 88 is one, and the Zach Aaron one is one, mm-hmm. and the Vince Carter one in 2000 was one, mm-hmm. and Dr. J from the ABA in 76 was one. David Thompson, let's not sleep on David Thompson.
Dude, yeah.
But, I mean, it's just a big part of it, and this is obviously one of the epic moments.
And then the question is, what is the next step of that lineage if we're not going to have the biggest names of this generation?
Non-NBA guys versus NBA guys. Yeah. And I don't think NBA guys want to lose to non-NBA guys, so that's why it's taken so long. But I don't know. And the dunk contest also, as a kid, it introduced me to a lot of players. I'm like, all right, I'm going to start to follow and see if he's any good. Like Kenny Walker, for me. My dad was a Knicks fan when he first came to this country. He was, lived in New York, and he used to talk about the Knicks all the time. And I remember the first time I saw Kenny Skywalker, I'm like, oh, all right, I'm going to check him out. And then you watch Kenny, and you're like, oh, he's a dunker. You know what I mean? Like, this is what he does. But, yeah, there's just different guys getting involved, always seeing the 6'10 guy and be like, oh, the tall guy's going to really pull this off? You know, I saw Sean Kemp in a dunk contest. Like, just those questions. I hope – I'm 39. I hope kids who are, 17 and younger, 16 and younger, are still trying to I hope they're going through the same things that I was going through while trying to figure out who my favorite players were or why do I love watching this the way that I do. I hope that inquisitive nature is still happening with young basketball fans, because I feel like now everything is packaged and processed. That when you do get to the raw art of it, you feel it. But everything else is just filler. And like I said, there'll be years of filler, and then you get somebody who's just ridiculous. Like Zion's not going to compete this year, but I hope at some point he does.
Yeah.
You know, because it'll be good for him. It'll be good for the league. And I think this weekend is supposed to be one of the more fun weekends in sports, and I look forward to it every year. And This was the crown jewel event of that weekend. All the concerts and all the other stuff, all the partying, dunk contest was where it was at. You knew that All-Star Saturday night was going to be a fun night. Heck, I remember when it was during the daytime in the afternoon, and now it's a primetime event. So I just wanted to be fun for kids, so there could be like a lot of little Jasons and KCs and Robs and Tonys running around out there who found their favorite player maybe, or introduced to a new favorite because of this contest.
The digital clock at Chicago Stadium reads 3:51 p.m. as Michael Jordan is flying from the foul line.
It's crazy.
3:51 p.m.
And how cold was it outside?
Right.
Very cold.
Right. Yeah. But think about,
I was in Wisconsin in college, but I know how cold it was that day because I talked to people about it. I got to tease two quotes.
Do you think?
I just got to tease two quotes. I don't want to say these are my favorite interviews because every interview was great for a different reason. Talked to Adam Silver, David Falk, Dominique, Vince Carter, Zach LaVine, Spud Webb, Gail Goodrich, on and on. But Tim Helm, the longtime Bulls PR guy, had this great quote that I got to tease.
Can you get it off without expletives?
Yeah.
I got Tim.
He said he doesn't the setup to this is he said that Michael didn't talk a lot about the dunk contest, tying into what we were talking about earlier, that he didn't plan for it much. But he said, I remember one time sitting next to him with a few days ago before the event, and I said, what's the slam dunk trophy look like anyway? Michael said, I don't know, but you're going to see it when you put it in the trunk of my car after the event.
And he wasn't laughing.
Yeah. And he wasn't laughing.
That's awesome.
And then this will set up Jason for the last word.
Here we go.
Because there is obviously some controversy. The big controversy turned when Dominique got a 45 on just, to me, one of the most ridiculous dunks of all time. It's basically a double pump, two-handed windmill that he drops to his shoes and then brings back around a tomahawk. It's just an insane dunk. So obviously a lot of controversy. They only got a 45 for that. Mm-hmm. But I talked to Charles Oakley for this piece. And this will set up.
Ending it with Tim Hallam and Charles Oakley. Two of the feistiest people in the NBA.
Oakley was a teammate of Michael's at the time. He was sitting right on the bench while this was transpiring. And this will set up Jason nicely because I asked Oakley, all right, who won? Because, again, a lot of controversy. Right. Charles Oakley, you don't win unless they give you the trophy so we can cut the talk out.
You know what?
That's his man's stuff.
Yeah, I know. But even when my man's is wrong, I tell him they're wrong. Charles, you're wrong. NBA, you're wrong. History, you are wrong. Old people listening right now, you're wrong as well. Dominique Wilkins won that damn dunk contest. I don't care.
Come off, Tom.
Yeah. I don't care what you say. And if you want to come at me on Twitter, I am at KCJ Hoop. All right, boys. Always fun, man. Thank you guys for giving us some of your time once again. For Casey Johnson, Rob Schaefer, I'm Jason Goff, my man Tony Gill. We are the guys here at Bulls Talk Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of the day.